Well, that sort of looks my typing.
Oh, there you are.
And my typewriter, the first typewriter with that little type.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And I guess this would be too.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's what you did then. You did the...
Yes. Yeah.
Were you the secretary for the fine arts department?
Yes, I was the department secretary.
Right.
So when we ran the festival, of course, I did all these things as well. Uh-huh. And made the bookings, and you know, it was a lot of work.
Probably pretty interesting, though.
Well,
eh?
It was wonderful, meeting all these people, you know.
So now let me ask you a little bit about your background.
Yes.
So you, how did you come to UBC, for instance, and when?
Well, I came to Canada from England in 1952. I think it was June of 1952. And I came out with a doctor and psychiatrist, a woman who I'd met in London. And she actually worked at the Crease Clinic, you know, outside New Westminster. And we lived in New Westminster. In fact, the first place I lived was Royal Avenue, an apartment, Royal Avenue, New Westminster. And Laura said to me, well, go out to UBC, because they're always looking for job, people wanting jobs, etc. So, you know, after I'd been here a week, I took the old interurban railway, you know, all the way.
From New Westminster?
From New Westminster.
I'm going to digress here.
I can't remember where I got it. But I do remember thinking it was very old-fashioned, because it still had wooden seats.
Uh-huh.
Whereas in England, we'd had padded seats for centuries, practically. And I had to get off at 4th Avenue and, where you go down to Granville Island now. And Laura said, well, there's a car wash there called M&J Car Wash. And it's run by a group of women, and that's where you get off, and then you get the bus to UBC. So I did all this. And had an interview, and they phoned me 2 days later and said, well, there was a job going in the registrar's office. And so I worked in the registrar's office for a year. I was on the counter answering questions. Well, I didn't know anything about the way UBC worked. It was quite different. I went to London University, and it was quite different. So I made all sorts of mistakes, I'm sure, but anyway. And it was at that point that I met Mr. Binney. And then I'd worked there for a year, and the secretary in the School of Architecture said they were looking for another secretary and to work for B.C. Binney and Peter Oberlander in planning. So I did that for a year. And then I went back to England because I told my mother I'd go to Canada for 2 years. So I went back.
So how old were you?
Well, I was 26, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd been in the war, and then I went to university for 4 years, so I was 26 when I came out here.
And what was your degree in university?
History. Yeah. So I went back to England, and I was there for about a year. And then Mr. Binning wrote, and he said he'd been told he could form a separate fine arts department, separate from the School of Architecture. And he put it very nicely. He said he realized that secretaries were like wise dogs and boats. There was never one quite like the first at would I come back. So how could I say no after that? I mean, you know, he had a wife and he had this funny little Scottie Terrier called Lucy that he was very fond of, and a boat. And those were the three things in his life, you know, and then there was the secretary came in. So so that was 1955, and I stayed there until I retired in 1991. So I was there for 6 years, 36 years. But it was wonderful. I mean, Mr. Binning was so nice, and everybody else was so nice, and it grew.
People would
say, how could you stay at the same job for 36 years? But of course, it wasn't the same job, you know. It grew and grew and grew. And every year there were new students and there were new faculty and all that. So I had a great time.
So tell me how the Festivals of Contemporary Art, UBC Festivals of Contemporary Art, developed.
Well, in the in the 50s, I guess in the middle and late 50s, there was the Vancouver Festival.
And that was put on by?
Well, I suppose Vancouver Community Arts Council, and then there were a lot of people, you know, Ibby Kerner and all these wealthy people, mainly people who'd come from Europe. And they formed really the sort of basis of anything that was going on in the arts in those days. And Nikki Goldschmidt, who's, you know, a big arts person in Ontario, but was pretty well unknown those days. He was the director of the festival. And they had wonderful people like Bruno Walter and who was that French mime?
Oh, not Marcel Marceau.
Yes, Marcel Marceau. And, well, lots of wonderful things. But, of course, it was a bit too big for its boots, and so it got into debt and had to bite the dust.
So it went on for more than once.
Yes, I would think 4 or 5 years, or so. Yeah. And out at UBC, one of our jobs in the Fine Arts Department was to run a program of events, recitals and poetry readings and dance and all sorts of things. And we had a Fine Arts Committee, and the heads of the various art departments were all on the committee. And I was the secretary. And one day we were talking about the demise of the Vancouver Festival. And there was one woman who worked for the extension department. I don't remember what her name was. And she said, well, why don't we put something on at UBC? I mean, the Fine Arts Committee were doing this sort of thing during the term time. So perhaps we could do it. And we talked that over, and we thought, well, early February was a sort of dead time in Vancouver where nothing really very much was going on, and we should have the festival in February. And it would mainly be for the students, but of course it would be open for the public as well. So I don't know, we formed a committee, and the next year there was the first festival, 1961. Mm-hmm. And of course there were people in all the departments who had contacts. I mean, Ian Doherty was working as, I don't know whether he was head of the music section with the CBC in Vancouver, so he arranged all the concerts and all the contacts. Mm-hmm. And then there was Warren Tallman, who was the English department, and he was from the States, and he knew all these poets down in San Francisco and L.A., and he would ask them to come up. And then there was Helen Goodwin with her contacts with dancers. Harry and Fran Adaskin, they had lots of contacts, again, with music. So, and that was the thing about Binning, really. He was the chairman. He was always a very good chairman, kept everybody focused and all that. But then if he thought somebody had a good idea, he'd say, well, all right, you do that. So off they would go and do it, you know. So he didn't interfere at all. And we had grants, I think, from the Faculty of Arts. I mean, it was only $2,000 to begin with or something, very small. But anyway, we managed, and Norman Mackenzie, the president then, was very sympathetic. And of course, they were a huge success, you know. People poured in to see all these things. And, you know, the students just loved it, of course. There were films, and I mean, that was the first time in my life, you know, I've led a very guarded life, when I was introduced to homosexuality, because I remember there was this movie, and these drag queens and all the rest of it. Yeah. So, no, the students really liked it. And then there were lots of people came up from the art school, of course, and I don't think there were any junior colleges in those days. But we always had good audiences. But it started to fade off. I mean, Mr. Binning retired in 1968 for health reasons. And he handed over the chairmanship to Herb Gilbert, who was, you know, an artist in our department. And Herb had quite other ideas. He was all into, sort of little green men from space, and sort of twee ideas like that. So, 1971, that was the last one, and it wasn't doing what he was really supposed to do.
Yeah, he was connected with a lot of strange groups all over the world, wasn't
he? That's right, yes.
Yeah, he used to go off to conferences and stuff where he'd wear his outfit. And, that's right.
Yes, he had some sort of a robe, and then he had bought this sort of crown. There was some fellow came up from the States again. I don't think it was to do with the festival, but he made these strange pieces of jewellery. So Herb had this sort of crown there with sort of antennae at the front, and that was what he wore when he was parading around Europe. I mean, dear old Herb, he was such a nice fellow. But he didn't quite have that. And that was the thing about Binning. He recognised, you know, genuine talent in anybody. And I don't think Herb quite had that gift.
He was more or less on his own. It was his own agenda that he was pursuing.
Yes.
So you worked with Helen on those. Committees, right? They were committees.
Well, there was a festival committee, and that was somebody from each of the disciplines, and Helen was for dance.
So when was she hired by UBC, and was she like a full-time person?
Yes, she was hired in physical education. And of course she had the understanding, and I think that the people in phys ed also would have liked to have had a separate dance section, particularly contemporary dance.
Oh, true.
Contemporary dance.
When you do that, you're messing around with the microphone.
Sorry.
Do you want me to move it to the other side?
No, no.
Because that seems to be the side you're going for all the time.
Yeah. No, I just won't do that.
Okay, sorry.
So
they wanted to have a separate, but there wasn't the resources or...
No, that's right. And I don't think there was quite enough...
customers.
Yes, customers and support from the university administration. So she never did get that going. She did sometimes give courses, I think, for the extension department in the evening. And I remember she had a dance group for faculty members. Anybody could go.
And did you attend? Did you attend?
No, I didn't attend. No, I don't know. But there was one fellow in one of the science departments that I knew, and he used to go, and he said, oh, Helen's absolutely wonderful. And he'd never thought he could dance or anything, you know. But he said she had this way of drawing things out of even the most unlikely person. So she must have been hired in about 58, I would think.
And she, I guess, as a physical education then, because she had quite an association with the architecture department, which was another creative department.
Well, that's it. I think that she found that Fred Lasserre and the other people in architecture were very sympathetic. And Lasserre was a product of the Bauhaus. He was actually a Swiss, but he had been to the Bauhaus. And he got this idea, you know, that architecture was the mother of the arts, all of them, you see, and he should be encouraging all the arts. And so he actually first set up this fine arts committee to bring events and things to the campus. And then Binning took over when he became head of the department.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So Lasserre was actually a very influential person. He was a very difficult man.
How so?
Well, he had these ideas, of course, and he was very determined. I mean, he would phone people at midnight, you know, to discuss something with them. I wouldn't think that other people might be in bed or something like that. So some people did find him difficult. But, he did a lot.
So when was he born?
Well, I suppose about the same time.
Same time. So they were contemporaries.
Maybe a little bit older than that.
And what had he built? Had he been a practicing architect?
Yes, he'd been in London, and he'd worked with some rather famous, you know, architectural group that were doing modern things. And then he came out here and he built the War Memorial Gymnasium at UBC and the Faculty Club. Mm. And then he built several rather nice small houses for faculty people. Mm. Yeah. But again, like Bert, you know, once you're the head of a department, it's difficult to carry on to any extent, really.
And Bert was English?
Bert?
Yes.
Well, he was born in Canada.
Oh, he
yes.
was? Oh, okay.
Yeah, but he was of English background.
I see.
Yeah,
yeah. Right.
And I mean, these two grandfathers who were architects in Ontario, so his family must have been settled in Ontario for quite a long time.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, he was born in the Medicine Hat, but came out here, I think, when he was 13 with his parents.
Yeah. So Helen would have had a rapport then with Fred Lasserre.
Yes.
And he would have. So who came after Fred was it Elder?
Yes. Henry Elder.
Took over the architecture department from Fred Lasserre.
Yes.
And when would that have been? Would that have been like in the mid-60s?
Well, yes. Lasserre was on sabbatical 1962. And he was quite a climber, being Swiss. And he was climbing with his son in the Lake District. And the son slipped. And in Lasserre's efforts to try and hold his son, he himself fell and was killed. That was 1962.
So did they both die?
No, the son
survived.
Yeah. So that was a terrible blow to everybody, you know. I remember hearing the news, thinking, oh, terrible.
Sudden, unexpected.
Yes,
yeah.
And then Henry Elder again was English and was quite a different type from Lasserre, not really as creative, I didn't think.
But supportive, nonetheless.
Time, yes, oh yes.
Of creative activity.
But by this time, of course, the Fine Arts Department was going.
Was moving.
So, and so in a way, the Fine Arts Department came the focus of all these activities.
Yeah. And the architecture department was somewhat peripheral, but nevertheless,
yes,
still.
Yes, I mean, the students all came, of
right,
course.
Right.
And some of the faculty as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because there was I guess it was a little later, towards the mid to late 60s, when the architecture department started to go through a major transition, right?
Yes.
Like, you know, people throwing out their desks and, you know, all that kind of stuff, right?
Yes. I remember Abe Rogatning saying to me once, well, Henry Elder, he's just a big bag of sugar. And he sort of...
Too sweet.
Yes, but he let anything happen. Lasserre would never... Lasserre was more disciplinary, being Swiss, I mean, you know,
right,
everything had to work properly, etc. Yeah. They were quite different types.
So Helen was doing. Was she dancing? Did she dance herself? Perform?
No, she certainly never did in the festivals. No.
So she was always a.
A sort of facilitator or something,
But she must have danced in England.
Oh, yes. She was with this Laban School of Dance, L-A-B-A-N. And I don't know who he was, but he had this school of dancing, and it was contemporary, not ballet or anything. And then she did some work with, I think it was Mary Wickram, who's another of the European dancers. Probably in England, you know, before the war. I expect she was Jewish and probably had to leave Germany. Mm. Yeah. So Helen had good training and, you know, lots of background in contemporary dance. Yes, but you're quite right. I never saw her dance.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember she used to introduce, I mean, when people like Jean Erdman gave lectures, and Helen would always introduce her. And she was always so beautiful. She wore a long dress, sort of velvet or very textured, you know. And she was sort of beautiful in a way, with this long face and a long nose, and very moved so nicely. I always remember standing there saying these few words. Yes, so she was a performer in a way, you know.
Yeah. So when would she have been born then? Would she also have been born in like the early teens, maybe?
I would think maybe 1918, 1920.
Oh, really?
I mean, she was a bit older than me, but not that much older. Uh-huh. No, I was born 1926. Uh-huh. So I would think she was born 1920 or something.
So by the time, in the 50s then, or the early 60s, by 1960,
yes,
she would have been in her 40s.
Yes, early 40s.
Early 40s.
Yes.
So she had had a lot of history.
Yes.
Before that.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I wonder who would know about all of that.
Yes, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I suppose physical education. I don't know what they're called now, if they are physical education. They must have her biography
records.
And file.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes. I mean, every faculty member had to. Every year they had to update their biographical notes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which was one of the things that annoyed me about trying to get these files. And I said, I'd like Mr. Binning's file as well. And he said, oh, we couldn't show you Mr. Binning's file. And I said, well, in a way, all I need are his biographical notes, you know, with all his exhibitions and things. She said, oh, no, that's confidential. And I said, but, you know, every year I typed up a new version of his biographical notes, so I know what's on them, but I can't remember the date. No, we couldn't let you see them.
That's amazing.
Yes.
That's amazing. So did you go any further? Did you try and... No.
No, it was just...
What about the freedom of information?
Well, of course, I could have gone to great lengths.
Yes.
But somehow it didn't seem all that necessary.
And isn't
then
that stuff
Abe
in the
and
library?
I went to the library and we found a lot of stuff in the
right.
library.
Yeah. Right.
At UBC. Yeah. Yes. So.
That's so funny. I mean, that's so strange in a way.
Well, it is, isn't it? Really?
Yeah. I guess you're talking to people who haven't a clue as to what went on then, or who you are, or what kind of contribution you might have made.
I mean, all the support staff has changed,
of course,
since I was there.
Uh-huh.
So I sort of can't blame them. They're just going by the rules, and UBC is much more bureaucratic than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the old days, Mr. Binney wanted a bit of money for something, he just walked over to see Larry McKenzie. And Larry McKenzie would ask the controller or whoever it was, and then money would be produced.
Uh-huh. Nice. Simple.
Yes. Simple.
Unfortunately, prone to corruption.
Yes,
I suppose. Yeah, potentially.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, so, and I mean, UBC is so much bigger, and, you know, it's got a huge budget, so mm-hmm. it obviously has to be more carefully controlled.
Mm-hmm. What about Warren Tallman, then? Did you have, were you associated with him at all in these panels?
Yes, of course, in the committee.
Uh-huh.
And then, keeping in touch with him to find out whether he's got these poets coming or whatever. He was a very nice man, I thought. And then he had this wife who was called Ellen Tallman, mm-hmm. and I've forgotten what she did, and they lived in this big old house in Kerrisdale, I remember. Yeah. And they used to have parties at the festival. Helen Goodwin used to have wonderful parties.
Really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
At her house?
But all these strange people, yes.
Yes?
Yeah. And, gradually I caught on that half of them were probably stoned half of the time, and that's why they all seemed so strange. Yeah.
So who would they have been? Any idea?
Well, yes. I remember there was Robin Blazer, who was a poet. And old Stan, who's the man who's still here? Can't remember. He came as a poet in the festival and then came back and lived in Vancouver.
Stan Persky.
Yeah.
Oh, is he now in Vancouver also?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, he was part
but
of...
But he was brought as one of the poets.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Where was he brought from?
I don't know if it was L.A. or San Francisco.
Oh, he's American.
But yes.
Right. Uh-huh.
Yeah, sure. Now, I'd have to look at the programs to try and remember the names of all the people.
Right, of course.
And I think the film I said was all about homosexuals was by Stanley Brakhage.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And Bruce Connor, who was an artist, and he had a show at the Fine Arts Gallery. You know, Alvin Borkin was, I think. And I remember Alvin introducing him at the opening and saying, well, Bruce Connor will now say a few words. And Bruce Connor just said, hi. There were so many funny things.
That's pretty good. I'm going to have to remember that.
Yeah. Well, he had a sort of installation, and everything was covered with cobwebs. That's all I remember, really.
Oh, real cobwebs? He set a bunch of spiders to work?
No. He created the
webs.
The web somehow. Uh-huh. Yes, but everything was sort of dusty and dirty and cobwebby and all that. Yeah.
So you didn't have too much to do with Warren, though, because it was a whole other department, I guess, eh?
And yes.
English department.
Yes.
But he had a huge influence on what happened in the literary scene in Vancouver.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he brought all those people up here and exposed.
Yeah.
But, I mean, interesting that the people of Vancouver were receptive to all of that, too.
Yeah, well, I think that people were waiting for something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd had the Vancouver Festival, which was much more sort of all classical stuff and an appeal to that strata of Vancouver society that had come from Europe. But, of course, underneath it all, I'm sure there was a whole lot of people who wanted something different and something more modern, contemporary, and that sort of thing. And that's what the festival did. Yeah. And, of course, we had a ready-made audience with the students. I mean, they just went to everything at all. Anyway, I mean, the word spread. And then, of course, it not only spread in Vancouver, I mean, it spread down in San Francisco and L.A., and then people, you know, like these dance groups, they came from New York. So the word got around that there was a lot of things happening in Vancouver. Yeah. I mean, we did have some people from Eastern Canada.
Uh-huh.
But it was mainly from the States.
Right. So, again, when I'm talking to people, they're referring to the university crowd and the downtown crowd.
Yes.
So there seems to be these two different groups.
Yes. Well, I think there always are town and gown, you know. But I think the festival brought those two groups together, certainly amongst a certain generation of young people. Yeah. There was something called the Western Art Association, which ran out from Seattle, mainly from that Henry Gallery at the University of Seattle. And, you know, the Fine Arts Committee belonged to that association. We paid money. And then once a year there was a meeting and people put forward ideas for exhibitions or recitals or lectures. And so we got on that circuit, you know, from the Western States. And then people would come up to Vancouver, and they would go down again.
And it would be the same, approximately the same time of year. February. Yes. I think that's yes. so brilliant that it should be February. Yes. I mean, that's yes. perfect. Yeah, yes. yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. You know, nobody's doing anything.
No,
there's nothing
that's right.
happening.
No, and I mean, in the east, of course, they're all covered in snow and all the rest of it. But Vancouver was just raining, so it was fine. Yeah, but I think one or two of the dance groups did go across Canada, but I couldn't be sure about that really.
So who else was involved with all of that then? So we had Warren Tolman, we had Helen Goodwin, okay, you mentioned Alvin. So was Alvin at the time, was he the curator at the Fine Arts Gallery?
Yes.
And so was he, would he have been on those committees also?
Oh, yes.
Oh, he was?
Oh, yes, yes. He and Abe Rogatnik.
Oh, and Abe was too.
Oh, yes.
And was Abe, he was teaching in the School
of
Architecture.
In the School of Architecture, yes, yes. But you should interview him.
I'm looking forward to that, yes.
Yes, because he'll have lots of good stories. But I remember we had lots of fun, you know, at those committee meetings. Another one was from the theatre department, Don Soul, S-O-U-L-E. And he was a very witty person. I mean, it was really almost a performance to sit in at those meetings.
Absolutely, I can imagine. It's the creative department, right?
Yes, really. But I remember when Alvin was negotiating with Bruce Conant to come up. And at some point, you know, Alvin was sitting there and he'd got this huge button which said, "I am Bruce Conner." And the next meeting, he had a button on this side and it said, "I am not Bruce Conner." Idiotic things like that. Yeah, so it was really lots of fun. So then Ian Doherty, and I think Ian Doherty gets forgotten about because, in a way, he's not a creative person.
But who was Ian Doherty?
Well, he worked for the CBC in their music department, and I think he was the head of it for a while. And he was in touch with musicians all over the world, really. So he was the sort of link, he and then Harry and Fran Adaskin, who were at UBC. There wasn't a music department then, you know, but they were the music department, those two. And
was he a director? Adaskin? Was he a composer, director?
He was a violinist.
A violinist.
Yeah, a violinist. And then his wife, Fran, was a pianist.
Uh-huh.
And they used to give these Wednesday Lunar concerts. And I went to those. And really, I was introduced to all sorts of, you know, contemporary composers writing this strange music. But Adaskin was very good at speaking about these things, and he would always talk about each piece before they played it. And he was very witty, too. He was also a rather literary person, had a huge library and loved to read poetry. And the Adaskins, they didn't give parties for the festival, but they did give parties during the year. And Paul and I were always invited. And Harry would be reading poetry, and then Fran would be playing the piano. Wonderful musical
Fantastic.
Evenings.
Soiree.
Yes, and all very sort of intimate. You know, everything. So that was music, Ian Doherty. And the Adaskins. And then Alvin pretty well did the art exhibitions, and helped by Abe. And
Because they had worked together for years
right? Yeah, they traveled a lot too, and they seemed to know everybody. I can't remember anybody else in the School of Architecture. I think it was mainly Abe. But, you know, one of the big things was this taking over the whole of the armories, you know, that old building. And there was a thing called The Medium is the Message. I mean, we did bring Marshall McLuhan up as well, you know. And it was after, I think he came twice, and then the third year, Abe set up this big thing in the Armory, which was called The Medium is the Message. And the school, students in the School of Architecture pretty well organized now. And that was a sort of multimedia event, you know, with... And it was very, you know, you were the audience and you just wandered around and you became part of the event. You know? And I suppose that was the beginning of Intermedia, I don't know.
I think you're probably right.
Yes.
So that was Ian Baxter did a large piece too,
right?
Right.
At that
event.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was, I guess, in the spirit of Marshall McLuhan, because he had come... Several times before that?
Yes, he'd come twice.
I read the in the program for at least one of the years that he came, I read the subjects of his talks and lectures and stuff, and they sounded so interesting.
Yeah.
I guess there would be minutes, or not minutes, but someone would have recorded that and transcribed that? I mean...
Well, yes, certainly... For one of his talks, it was recorded. It was a woman in the extension department. In fact, I think it was Sheila Lindsay, who's still around.
You think she would have a recording of some of his stuff?
Well, we had one in the department, and I guarded it with my life. It was rather difficult because you never knew what to do with it.
Exactly.
I knew about paper files, and I could have filed it away easily and known where it was. But there was this little box.
It was a reel-to-reel tape, I guess,
yes,
eh?
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. And I can't remember very clearly, I have to say, Malcolm, but I think I sent it over to the UBC Library.
Yeah. So did you meet, I guess you must have met Marshall McLuhan then. Or not?
Well, no, I didn't meet him.
You were kind of
personally.
In the background, I guess.
I was sort of, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I did meet a lot of the people, mainly at the parties. But he was rather an aloof person, you know. He probably went to special parties where other people weren't invited or something.
Right.
But I did go to the lecture, but of course I didn't understand a word of it.
You didn't?
No.
Oh, I was hoping that maybe it wasn't so cryptic.
Well,
it sounded like, you know, when I read about the subjects, it sounded quite understandable. But I guess that's just how you get, you in the door.
Yes, that's right. Yes, I don't know who did these little bits about the events. Well, I suppose it was the people who were bringing that particular person along. So maybe they wrote more clearly than Marshall McLuhan did.
Yeah, it says here, Marshall McLuhan Lecture, 12:30 p.m. Auditorium.
Yeah.
Changing Attitude to Space in Poetry, Painting, and Architecture Since Television.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that sounds like a pretty intriguing subject.
Yeah.
But... Yeah. Not understandable at all.
Well, not to me.
It's just the way
you know.
He spoke, eh?
Yes.
And what was another one? There was another one here, too, which was good. The strange tendency of the popular arts to go iconic and highbrow. Mm-hmm. And another one was the Europeanization of the American way of life since television. Admission 75 cents. So there was actually a charge for...
We did charge for some of them.
Yeah.
I mean, some people just came up and said, no, they didn't need to be paid so long as somebody would give them a bed. And I mean, Warren Torman, of course, had all these poets staying in his house.
Right.
So I don't think we paid them. I mean, we had to pay for the dance groups, of course.
Oh, because they had expenses.
Yes.
Right,
overhead. I mean, their travel was because they brought their own props.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember how we got through all that, you know. But a lot of people just said, well, yes, we'd come up. We'd like
Fantastic.
To see Vancouver. We've heard about Vancouver or what. And so they would be put up by faculty members for nothing.